ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 76, Text Number 6. Evasuramanushyanam
Evasuramanushyanam
Chandarvuragirakshanam
Chandarvuragirakshanam
Abhidyam Chamakam Vavre
Abhidyam Chamakam Vavre
Sayanam Vishni Vishanam
Sayanam Vishni
Devasuramanushyanam
Devasuramanushyanam
Gandharvuragarakshasam
Gandharvuragarakshasam
Abhijam kamagam vavre
Abhijam kamagam vavre
Sayanam vishnubishyanam
Sayanam vishnubishyanam
chose a vehicle that could be destroyed by neither demigods, demons, humans, Gandharvas, Uragas, nor Rakshasas that could travel anywhere he wished to go, and that would terrify the Vrishnis. This is a benediction he got from Lord Shiva. Previously, he was very incensed because he was defeated in battle by Krishna at the time of the kidnapping of Rukmini, and he swore that I will rid the earth of all Yadavas, just see my prowess. And then he worshipped Lord Shiva, and after a year Lord Shiva offered him a benediction. He worshipped, performed austerities by eating a handful of dust each day and nothing more. Lord Shiva offered a choice of benedictions, and so he chose this amazing airship. Lord Shiva said, "Oh, so be it. On his order, Maya Danava, who conquers his enemy cities, constructed a flying iron city named Shobha and presented it to Shalva." I'm reading through many texts here, there's no purports. Okay. This unassailable vehicle was filled with darkness and could go anywhere. Upon obtaining it, Shalva went to Dvarka, remembering the Vishnu's enmity toward him. Text 9 till 11. Shalva besieged the city with a large army, Obesita Bharatas, disseminating the outlying parks and gardens, dimensions along with their observatories, towering gateways and surrounding walls, and also the public recreational areas. From his excellent airship, he threw down a torrent of weapons, including stones, tree trunks, thunderbolts, snakes, and hailstones. A fierce whirlwind arose and blanketed all the directions of dust. Thus terribly tormented by the airship, Shobha, Lord Krishna's city, had no peace, O King, just like the earth when it was attacked by the three aerial cities of the demons. What does that refer to? When the earth was attacked by the three aerial cities of the demons? Text 13. Seeing his subjects so harassed, the glorious and heroic Lord Prajumna told them, "Do not fear," and mounted his chariot. Text 14-15. The chief commanders of the chariot warriors, Satyaki, Charudeshna, Shamba, Akrura, and his younger brothers, along with Hardikya, Panuvinda, Gada, Shuka, and Sharana, went out of the city with many other eminent bowmen, all girded in armor and protected by contingents of soldiers riding on chariots, elephants, and horses, and also by companies of infantry. Text 16. A tumultuous, hair-raising battle then commenced between Shalva's forces and the Yadus, which equaled the great battles between the demons and the demigods. Text 17. With his divine weapons, Prajumna instantly destroyed all of Shalva's magic illusions in the same way that the warm rays of the sun dissipate the darkness of the night. Text 18-19. Lord Prajumna's arrows all had gold shafts, iron heads, and perfectly smooth joints. With 25 of them, he struck down Shalva's commander-in-chief, Juman, and with 100 he struck Shalva himself. Then he pierced Shalva's officers with one arrow each, his chariot drivers with 10 arrows each, and his horses and other carriers with 3 arrows each. Text 20. When he saw the glorious Prajumna perform that amazing, and mighty feat, all the soldiers on both sides praised him. Text 21. At one moment the magic airship built by Mayadhanava appeared in many identical forms, and the next moment it was again one only. Sometimes it was visible and sometimes not. Thus Shalva's opponent could never be sure where it was. Text 22. From one moment to the next, the Shobha airship appeared on the earth, in the sky, on a mountain peak, or in the water, like a whirling flaming batlet. It never remained in any one place. 23. Wherever Shalva would appear with his Shobha ship and his army, there the Yadu commanders would shoot their arrows. 24. Shalva became bewildered upon seeing his army and aerial city thus harassed by his enemy's arrows, which struck like fire, and were as intolerable as snake venom. Purport Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the arrows of the Yadu commanders burned like fire, struck simultaneously from all sides like the sun's rays, and like snake venom were lethal by a single touch. 25. Because the heroes of the Vishnu clan were eager for victory in this world and the next, they did not abandon their assigned posts on the battlefield, even though the downpour of weapons hurled by Shalva's commanders tormented them. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, the heroes of the Yadu dynasty were determined to either die on the battlefield or gain victory. They were confident of the fact that they would die in the fighting. If they would die in the fighting, they would defeat the heavenly planet, and if they would come out victorious, they would enjoy the world. I'll just go on a little bit. 26. Shalva's minister Juman, previously wounded by Sri Prajumna, now ran up to him and roaring loudly struck him with his club of black steel. and 27. Prajumna's driver, the son of Daruka, thought that his valiant master's chest had been shattered by the club. Knowing well his religious duty, he removed Prajumna from the battlefield purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that actually Prajumna has a satchit in the body, an eternal spiritual form that can never be wounded by mundane weapons. Daruka's son, however, was a great devotee of the Lord, and out of intense love he feared for the safety of his master and thus removed him from the battlefield. Srila Prabhupada writes, the name of Shalva's commander-in-chief was Juman. He was very powerful, and although bitten by 25 of Prajumna's arrows, he suddenly attacked Prajumna with his fierce club and struck him so strongly that Prajumna became unconscious immediately. He was roaring, now he is dead, now he is dead. The force of the club on Prajumna's chest was very severe enough to tear asunder the chest of an ordinary man. There's just a few texts left before we finish the chapter, so we'll go ahead. Text 28. Quickly regaining consciousness, Lord Krishna's son Prajumna said to his charioteer, O driver, this is abominable for me to have been removed from the battlefield. Except for me, no one born in the Yadu dynasty has ever been known to abandon the battlefield. My reputation has now been stained by a driver who thinks like a eunuch. What will I say to my fathers, Rama and Keshava, when I return to them after having simply fled the battle? What can I tell them that will be fit my honor? Purport, Sri Prajumna here uses the word Peter, O fathers, loosely. Lord Balaram was, of course, his uncle. 31. Certainly my sisters-in-law will laugh at me and say, O hero, tell us how in the world your enemies turned you into such a coward in the battle. 32. The driver replied, O long-lived one, I have done this knowing full well my prescribed duty. O my lord, the chariot driver must protect the master of the chariot when he is in danger, and the master must also protect his driver. 33. With this rule in mind, I removed you from the battlefield since you had been struck unconscious by your enemy's club, and I thought you were seriously injured. Thus end the purport to the humble servants of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada, the 10th canto, 76th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Battle Between Shalva and the Vrishnis. So here we see that it's mentioned how the heroes were determined to die on the battlefield or gain victory, the heroes of the Yadu dynasty. But this is the mentality of the Kshatriyas, and Lord Krishna also encouraged Arjuna in this way in the Bhagavad Gita, that you should go on performing your duty, and either you will, be victorious, and in this way conquer the earth. Yudhishthira will become the emperor of the earth, and you will, along with him, you will rule the earth, Pandava brothers. Or if you're defeated, then well, you'll attain the heavenly planets. You'll be glorious also. So this is the mentality of the Kshatriyas, that one way or another they have to fight, running away from the battlefield is not an option. If that was an option, many Kshatriyas might run in fear and become cowards. But that's not an option. If they do that, then they become infamous. No one would respect them if they left the battlefield. But Krishna, he can leave the battlefield if he wants. Krishna is known as Ranshor. Ranshor means one who fled from the battlefield. That was in fighting with Jarasandha, was it? Jarasandha. Krishna, during that pastime, also didn't he go to that cave where Mukshakunda was sleeping? and woke him up. But who was pursuing him then?
Kaliyavana.
So was he fled from the battlefield from fighting with Kaliyavana? Who can remember the exact pastime?
Yeah.
So Kaliyavana was an ally of Jarasandha. Mm-hmm. And he pursued Krishna. Mm-hmm. And so they went into the cave and Kaliyavana was in hot pursuit. So Nityakanda had long fought for the demigods and he had a benediction, whoever woke him up would be burned to ashes. But when he opened his eyes he saw Kaliyavana first, and Kaliyavana was burned to ashes. And then of course he got the darshan of Lord Krishna, so that was a great benediction for him. wasn't it during their flight that they went to the top of a mountain, great mountain? Krishna and Balaram? After that, no? Is it? He jumped off the mountain. Is that also part of that Leela? Or not? Afterwards, is it completely separate Leela or are they? Right, but why did they go to the top of the mountain? Right. No, but why did they go up to the top of it? Then it was surrounded by fire after they were on the top of it, right? And then they had to jump. Yeah, so it's also part of the same Leela then. They were running away. This is all part of the same Leela. Krishna was running away from Jarasandha. They gave the benediction to Muchikunda and then also went to the top of the mountain. What's the name of the mountain? Sure, yeah. Why not? Maybe it's in this part too. No? Anyway, Krishna, he can do such things. He can break all the rules. Ordinary kshatriyas, they're not supposed to do that, but Krishna is a rule maker, so he doesn't have to abide by the rules. He doesn't become infamous or lose his reputation. He becomes glorious by his running away also. Just like stealing as well. Ordinary person should not steal. If they steal, they're punished by the government. Like there's a Leela in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Gopinath Patanaika. He's one of the sons of Bhavananda Roy, brother of Ramananda Roy. He was a tax collector, but he took some of the money and used it for his own purposes. So the king told the prince, well, the king demanded the money, and Gopinath Patanaika offered that, I have some very nice horses. I don't have the money right now, but I've got some very nice horses. So if you take them for the market price, the proper price, then it will extinguish part of the debt and the balance I'll pay it off gradually. Sorry?
Yes, so then after the deliverance of Muchikunda, after Muchikunda burned Kriyavana to ashes, then the chapter ends after Krishna gives him liberation. Mm-hmm. And then the next chapter, 52, is from his passage to Lord Krishna. And the chapter describes the Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna running as since he went into Walker. This is an introduction. There are also pictures of all this.
Okay. Yeah, this is the summary here. This chapter describes how Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna running as if in fear went to Dwarka. Then Lord Krishna heard the message of Rukmini from the mouth of a Brahmana and chose her as his wife. Lord Muchakunda, King Muchakunda, shown mercy by Lord Krishna, offered obeisances and circumambled him. So the king then left the cave and saw that humans, animals, trees and plants were all smaller than when he had fallen asleep. From this he could understand that the age of Kali was at hand. Thus, in a mood of detachment from all material associations, the king began worshipping the Supreme Lord Sri Hari. Sri Krishna returned to Mathura, which was still under siege by the barbarian army. He destroyed this army, collected all the valuables the soldiers had been carrying, and set off for Dwarka. Just then, Jarasandha arrived in the scene with a force of 23 Akshahinis, Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, acting as if fearful, left their riches aside and ran far away. So, it seems that the deliverance of Muchakunda took place just before that. So there seems to be like two running aways. Because in the previous chapter, this chapter describes how Lord Krishna caused Muchakunda to kill Kaliyavana with his harsh glance, and it also relates to the conversation between Muchakunda and Lord Krishna. After placing his family members safely within the Dwarka fortress, Sri Krishna went out of Mathura. He appeared like the rising moon. Kaliyavana saw that Krishna's brilliantly effulgent body matched Narada's description of the Lord, and thus the Yavana knew he was the personality of Godhead. Seeing that the Lord carried no weapons, Kaliyavana put his own weapons aside and ran towards him from behind, wanting to fight with him. Sri Krishna ran from the Yavana, staying just barely beyond Kaliyavana's grasp at every step, and eventually leading him a long distance toward a mountain cave. As Kaliyavana ran, he hurled insults at the Lord, but he could not grasp him, since his stock of impious karma was not yet depleted. Sri Krishna entered the cave, whereupon Kaliyavana followed after him and saw a man lying on the ground. Taking him for Sri Krishna, Kaliyavana kicked him. The man had been sleeping for a very long time, and now, having been violently awakened, he looked around angrily in all directions and saw Kaliyavana. The man stared harshly at him, igniting a fire in Kaliyavana's body and in a moment burning him to ashes. This extraordinary person was a son of Mandata's named Muchakunda. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow. Previously he had spent many long years helping to protect the demigods from the demons. When the demigods had eventually obtained Kartikeya as a protector, they allowed Muchakunda to retire, offering him any boon other than liberation, which only Lord Vishnu could bestow. Muchakunda had chosen from the demigods the benediction of being covered by sleep, since then he had been lying asleep within the cave. Goes on to explain the conversation between Muchakunda and Krishna. So he was fleeing from Kaliyavana there, and went into the cave, and delivered Muchakunda from his sleeping condition. Then the next chapter, so it's described that then Krishna returned to Mathura, says here. Krishna returned from Mathura, and then again Krishna and Balaram ran away from the battlefield. Because Jarasandha could not appreciate, they left their riches aside and ran far away. Because Jarasandha could not appreciate the true power, he ran after them. After running a long way, Rama and Krishna came to a mountain named Pravarshana and proceeded to climb it. Jarasandha thought they had hidden inside a cave and looked all over for them. Unable to find them, he built a fire on all sides of the mountain. As the vegetation on the mountain slopes burst into flame, Krishna and Balaram jumped up the peak. After reaching the ground unseen by Jarasandha and his followers, they returned to the Dwarka fort, which floated within the sea. Jarasandha decided Rama and Krishna had burned to death in the fire, and he took his army back to his kingdom. Mm-hmm. At this point, Maharaj Pariksit asked a question, and Sri Sukadeva Goswami responded to it by beginning to narrate the story of the marriage of Krishna and Rukmini. So what? There were two runnings away. They're linked together, very closely together. But, anyway, Krishna can do such things, and it's glorious. It's a wonderful pastime. And similarly, yes, stealing can also steal. So we were describing about how ordinary persons, you know, even devotees, great devotees, they shouldn't steal. Sometimes devotees steal flowers and think this is not good. Devotees, you know, they sometimes have that mentality that, you know, it's for Krishna, so it's all right. Or they would change up people on the streets. In America, they had some system of changing up, you know, asking people to change, give them change, right? Is it? They would, or they would say, give it part of it, the donation.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So this didn't create a good reputation for the devotees, obviously. Anyhow, just to illustrate that Lord Chaitanya, he was strict with his devotees in that regard. Gopinath Padanaika, he had spent some of the government's money, and the king wanted it back, and they offered his horses, and the king sent the prince to assess the value of the horses. And the prince gave a very low value, and Gopinath naturally was upset. And he criticized the prince. The prince had an idiosyncrasy of turning up his head and looking at the sky. So he said, at least my horses don't turn their heads and look at the sky. And this made the prince very angry. So he decided to arrest Gopinath and condemn him to death. And they had some system called a changa, a very high-raised platform with sharp swords underneath. There was a trap door. So the condemned person had to stand on top of that platform on that trapdoor, and suddenly it would open, he would fall on these sharp swords, and he would die like that. So Gopinath was raised up in the changa. So immediately some of the devotees went to appeal to Lord Chaitanya, please help, because Gopinath has been put in the changa. Lord Chaitanya asked, why is that? And they described that he had, you know, not pay his dues to the government. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, what's wrong with that then? The king is perfectly justified in taking action if he's misspent the government's money. And Lord Chaitanya just, you know, he didn't want to get involved. Then again others came and they were appealing to the Lord, and Lord said, if you keep bothering me, I'm going to leave, I'll go to Alana. The only way you can help him is to pray to Lord Jagannath. Then somebody actually went to the king and explained what was going on. The king said, well, I don't want to kill him. I don't want to take his life. It's a prince that's done this. So then he ordered that Gopinath be taken down from the changa. And then he summoned him, you know, what's happening. And Gopinath explained that, you know, I wanted to give him the horses, but I wanted a proper price to be paid. So then the king, because he was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, the king pardoned him and actually doubled his salary and gave him a very valuable cheddar as well. So When Lord Chaitanya heard it, he wasn't that pleased actually, but still, you know, Prataprabhu Maharaj had done that because he knew that Bhavananda Roy and his sons are all devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we can see that Lord Chaitanya was strict and he wanted his devotees to follow the rules and regulations. He was also himself very strict in his own vows as a sannyasi. If he was offered like oil or massage or anything like that, he wouldn't accept it. He rejected when Jagannanda Pandit brought sandalwood oil, Lord Chaitanya rejected it. He said, put it in the lamps in the Jagannath temple. People will criticize me if I use this fragrant oil. And of course, Jagannanda smashed the oil in the courtyard in a fit of anger and locked himself in his room for several days. And Lord Chaitanya had to come and ask him to cook. And he came out and cooked it. Lord Chaitanya tasted the prasad. He said, you cook even better when you're angry. So he was a incarnation of Satyabhama, who was a, you know, sort of fire woman. Krishna's wives had a fiery nature. So anyhow, yes, Lord Chaitanya was strict. Krishna himself also, you know, he was strict in establishing Varnashrama. But he himself, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he would, you know, break the rules whenever he wanted. And that's considered glorious. Lord Chaitanya, he didn't do that because he was acting as a devotee to set an example for other devotees. But Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so therefore, you know, he's also glorious as a thief. Makan chor, a butter thief. You know, we like to hear the pastimes of how Krishna would and Balaram would go and steal the butter and feed it to the monkeys. And the gopis would sometimes tie it up high. If they couldn't get it, they would urinate on the floor. You know, perform naughty pastimes like that. He also stole the gopis' clothes. This was also considered very improper in society, such behavior. Also performed a rasa dance. So he's sometimes considered a debauchee. What is that? Asvisivapadaram tamphanastaman darshanam marmahutam kruktiva yatatata vayu data lampato. Lampato means a debauchee. Lord Chaitanya is glorifying Krishna. Even, you know, you can do whatever you like. You can make me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You can treat me like that. And he is in the mood of a Radharani or a Gopi. Even though Lord Krishna's behavior is not in accordance with social etiquette. And there are so many, you know, pastimes in Vraja when Krishna is, you know, visiting Radharani. She's married, Radharani, married to Abhimanyu. So that's a parakya vow. He's, you know, having pastimes with her, even though she's married, and having, you know, attracting the gopis to the forest and the dead, and that, even though they're married like that. So Krishna is able to do those things, and we relish hearing those pastimes. Others should not imitate. We have to follow the social etiquette, the rules and regulations, and this will be glorious. So here we see the heroes of the Yadu dynasty, other Kshatriyas, they always followed the rules and regulations. In the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna also did quite a few things, isn't it? Where he broke the standard etiquette and laws of combat, like when he encouraged Arjuna to fire the arrows at Bhishma, even though Bhishma was not willing, because they had put Shikhandi on the front of the chariot. Shikhandi was formerly Kumbha, who had vowed to kill Bhishma because of her not of his not marrying her. So no one could defeat Bhishma. He had in combat, he had fought with all the five Pandavas and brought them to the point of being fully at his mercy. He could have killed them, but he released them because of his affection for them. And so the only way to kill him was by using this trick. And Krishna put Shikhandi in front and then had Arjuna fire the arrows from behind. Similarly, with Drona, he told Yudhisthira to announce Ashwatthama is dead, the son of Drona. Ashwatthama is dead. Because he knew Drona would give up fighting if he knew his son was dead. But Yudhisthira refused because he didn't want to tell any lie. He was known for always speaking the truth. Therefore, his chariot wheels never touched the ground due to his high moral character. So then, Krishna had then killed the elephant Ashwatthama, and he said, okay, now you can announce Ashwatthama, the elephant is dead. And when he said the word elephant, Krishna blew his conch. So it couldn't be heard. Drona just heard that Ashwatthama is dead, and then he gave up fighting. He sat down on the battlefield. This way he was defeated. And similarly with Karna also. When Karna's chariot wheel was stuck in the mud, he got down to lift it out and he turned his back to Krishna and Arjuna. Krishna told Arjuna to shoot him in the back. There's so many pastimes like this that Krishna is you know, breaking the rules. I mean, he's been ordering his devotee to break the rules. And when Yudhisthira didn't agree to say Ashwatthama that his chariot wheels touched the ground, and the Pandavas had to go to see hell, isn't it? After they left the body, before they reached heaven, they had to go to hell, and some say that because Yudhisthira spoke a lie. In a sense, when he said, as you know, he cooperated with that. That our acharyas say no, it's because he didn't follow Krishna's order. That's why Arjuna followed Krishna's order when he shot Karna in the back. But there, Yudhisthira wasn't willing to follow the order. So actually, Krishna can break the rules, and if he orders his devotee to break the rules, then the devotee has to break the rules. That's a higher principle than, you know, sticking strictly to all the, you know, laws of society and moral laws and so on and so forth. And following the order of Krishna, this is the highest morality, the highest principle. But, you know, in so many other situations, Lord Krishna does follow the rules and set an example for others. So in this way, you know, he can behave according to his own sweet will. Okay, any question or comment here? Yeah? Yeah, well, we have to, within reason. But there is an example, I think, devotees were taking prasadam once with Prabhupada, and I think it was Ramananda and Tamal Krishnamurti were there. They were taking prasadam. There was maybe a gulab, or rasgulla on the Tamal Krishnamurti's plate, and when he was looking the other way, Ramananda stole it. And he got very upset, and Prabhupada laughed, and he said, "This is all right." But I mean, within reason, you know. Sometimes we hear of, you know, devotees stealing the maha and hoarding the maha, or, you know, sometimes, you know, grabbing prasadam from each other's plates and becoming a free-for-all. This is not a good idea also, create too much chaos and bad example for others. Generally, no, we don't, we shouldn't steal. There are certain things we should live to, learn to give up. There are many things which we can engage in Krishna's service, but certain propensities we should give them up. Stealing is one of them. Oh, okay. Got it. All right, thank you. Nataraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Rora Prayamanam Ki. Hari Om.